Hello and welcome to An Awful Lot of Running, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm your host. Wait, hang on. Nope. No, this isn't right. Jack, have you stepped on another butterfly?
Hello and welcome to An Awful Lot of Running, a Doctor Who podcast.
Woo!
Robin, we've got brand new Doctor Who. We've got a new series.
Oh, it's such a good time to be alive, like new Doctor Who that we're both watching at the same time together. All absolutely brand new stuff. Yeah. Oh, it's glorious.
And the thing is as well, we might have some new listeners because this could be people's jumping on point for Doctor Who. So if you are listening for the first time, please, you know, rate, subscribe and go over all that stuff and listen to past episodes. But so, you know, my name is Jack. I am the co-host of this podcast and joining me, as always, my fellow co-host, the Eric to my Captain Poppy. It's Robin Fowle.
Hey everyone, well, whether you are someone brand new or a returning listener to the show, we always appreciate your support. We're here to discuss our love and passion for Doctor Who, and starting off with the first brand new episode of a new series, Space Babies.
Yeah, woo! Space Babies, written by Russell Davis, the showrunner, and directed by Julie Ann Robinson. Yeah, it's... I have to say, before we get into reviews and stuff, Robin, you're very lucky that you got Eric. I very, very almost went Captain Poppy and Bogeyman. So
yeah, I was wondering if you were going to go for that. I was like, okay.
But I decided to go Eric because Eric, like yourself, is so lovable and so wonderful. You know, no one could ever possibly hate you and no one could ever possibly hate Eric. So yes, it made sense.
Thank you.
No, that's all right. Yeah, no, it's good. So yeah, it's... I mean, we're talking about new Doctor Who, which is amazing. I know we've got seven more episodes after this to talk about as well in the next coming weeks, because this is our season one, the Disney era, the new Who era. I can't remember the name we coined for it, or the name you could, you know, what's
new Who?
Yeah, what's new Who? Yeah, wait, what's new? Okay. So, Space Babies. I'll come to you first, Robin, about this now. Initial thoughts on the episode and where you were that night. Because, okay, I saw this episode before at a premiere, and then I also watched it at midnight when it dropped on the iPlayer. You, bless your heart, waited for the double feature on BBC One, didn't you?
I did, yeah. No, my plan was to watch this with both my fiance and my parents, who that used to be our thing, me and my parents. It used to be Friday night or Saturday night would be the heater night with in front of the TV with brand new episode of Doctor Who. And we haven't done that as a family for 10 years, something crazy like that.
Wow.
So it was like, no. shut up, you. no, I wanted to enjoy this fully awake and not be a zombie, because staying up late is something I can't do anymore, despite my old university self being able to, and I want to properly absorb everything going on in an episode and appreciate it. Like, if you're half asleep, then it just feels really forced. I don't know if you want to talk about your experiences first with the fact you got to see this so much earlier.
Well, yeah, I saw this a whole 10 days early. I saw this the 1st of May at the Chapter Arts Centre in Cardiff, on an event put on by Back to Cymru, where there was a, you know, there was a Q&A panel as well with executive producers, producer, costume designer and set designer as well, and Phil Collinson, who people will know as the executive producer, along with Joel Collins, who was also there on the panel, was also in the room as well. You know, Phil goes back to the original New Who, you know, with Christopher Eccleston. So it was really interesting to sort of be there and then sit in a theater with friend of the show, Catherine Wheeler, and their partner, Nat as well, was there. And we just sat and sort of had like a religious experience, really.
Yeah.
You know, sitting and watching this episode. And it feels so wonderful to finally be able to talk about it now, because I've had so many thoughts and so many just wonderful things about it. And then obviously I watched it, you know, 12 midnight when it dropped on the iPlayer as well, because I wanted to do the double feature. And it's very much designed to be a double feature. This it's designed to be, you know, you do Space Babies and you go into the Devil's Chord, which is the, you know, which we'll talk about in our next episode. And I loved it. My wife, bless her, made it halfway through Devil's Chord before she was like, oh, I need to go up now. For some reason, I expected, because I've got two young kids and I, you know, work as a teacher as well, I'm usually falling asleep by like 9:30 at night. Something,
yeah.
Whether it be adrenaline or excitement or just the endorphins, was just powering me on. And I was so hyped. And it took it. I think I went to bed finally after watching. I watched the first Unleashed. I watched the Unleashed for Space Babies. And then I went to bed after chatting about it online a bit. And I think it must have been about 2:30 or 2:45. And then I got up with the kids at 6:00. And I was fine. I'm really surprised. I'm really surprised. Hit me Sunday, didn't it?
Oh,
hit me Sunday, yeah. I was like, oh, God, no.
No, the whole time, Jack, I just imagine you're full of adrenaline. Your heart's just going, dum, 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 dum.
No, my heart was going, ba 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 ba.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually had to go to A&E about it, so thanks for bringing that up, Robin. That's where.
Yeah.
So okay. So I think I'm going to say straight up, when it comes to my experience with Space Babies, I don't know if I'm compromised in my review, because I don't know if the experience I had has affected my feelings on the episode. Or it's just genuinely that I absolutely adore Space Babies and think it's a fantastic episode of Doctor Who and in this new era.
No, I think that's a very valid point, because I think anyone in your position who got to see something 10 days early had the wonderful experience of being there with people who worked on it, with fans and the like. You know, that's definitely going to have an impact on things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when you go to a BFI, even if you see like an episode or two, which is renowned for being so good, you can have a good laugh with it or something.
There is something to be said about watching Doctor Who with people, you know, other people, rather than just, you know, and, you know, obviously usually I watch Doctor Who, like, you know, repeats of Doctor Who I watch by myself. You know, I'm, you know, God knows I haven't got my wife watching the season 8 of, you know, Pertwee Who, which I'm currently watching right now. Like I'm making my way through the season 8 box set, and she's got no interest for Colony in Space. She's like, why would I watch 6 episodes of this old crappy TV show? I'm like, no, it's really good. It's the best Doug Arlo story.
You mean she hasn't sat down and watched The Web Planet with you?
I actually want my marriage to survive, so I have not subjected to The Web Planet. I feel like that's a good point, Star, where you could cut to the actual annoying noise if you're listening to this from The Web Planet. But yeah, no, so I unabashedly love this episode. When I first saw it in the theater, I mean, I cried at the Doctor Who theme and opening titles, like, genuinely, because it was such an amazing thing. But then there were so many points of the episode as well that I was just, my jaw was on the floor as if I was the Not Doctor in Wild Blue Yonder. And I was crying, I was laughing, I had such an amazing experience. And I think part of that is what really, you know, I know, well, what, we're 3 episodes into his era. He's technically been in 4 episodes. Yeah. I think I can say firmly at this point that Shuti Gatra is now my favorite Doctor. You know, and I don't, and I know there's a question of recency bias there and things like that, but I really think there's energy and something special about him which just captures everything I think the Doctor Who should be.
I think he is truly wonderful. I think he's, you know, he's a wonderful actor who brings so much energy to his character. I think he brings a lot of his own natural charm from, like, I haven't seen the whole series. I've only seen clips online, but his episodes from Sex Education, I know he is just amazing in that. And he brings that same energy to this. And not only is he great, but it's the fact that he's paired up with Millie, who is just also a phenomenal actress.
Oh,
she's quickly becoming one of my favorite companions.
Together they are just iconic. Just the chemistry between them is so, it's like, don't get me wrong, I think, you know, I think every companion and Doctor pairing has had good chemistry to a certain extent, you know, especially in New Who as well, like, because I just think them bouncing off each other is so exciting. With this, it really is exactly what Millie said long ago, that it does feel like two naughty schoolgirls traveling through space time together.
Yes,
best friends, and it's so wonderful. Millie is such a brilliant actress. There's so many little things that she does that just are so funny and so thoughtful as well, and and just the way they bounce off each other, honestly, I think they're definitely one of my favorite TARDIS, you know, duos or teams, and I think they are just already iconic, you know. I tell Robin, I think that comes to I've said a bit, you know, we'll get into the episode properly.
Yeah, of course.
What did you think of Space Babies beyond what you've already said there?
So, because I wanted to give a bit of time for you to give your own insight there before I continued on your original question, which was, yo, Robin, what were your initial thoughts? So it was just wonderful to be there on the night, having, thank God, avoided all spoilers on Twitter, because past midnight, apparently, people online think it's fair game to just spoil everything. And friends of ours on the show, even before the first episode aired, had like 1 to 3 spoilers like thrown at them. And it's like, so for this, survived all that, sat around the sofa with our food and double bill, and I had a real great time with both episodes. Like, the fact that I was there with my fiance, my parents, sort of different age demographics and different experiences with Doctor Who, all come together and just having good fun. As for me, like, I definitely loved a lot of moments from this episode, but I also thought that there were some flaws in the episode and some aspects of it that stopped me from enjoying it to its fullest. And I think part of that is just for my own personal preferences and part of my own personal, like, things that make me tick, things that I like. And I think it'll be interesting to discuss those aspects with you tonight.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing it about that. I'd say maybe we should start with something positive first before we go into those, because I think it's important that as much as we like these episodes in point, it's always good that we do have that sort of balanced and fair critique. I do personally, I feel that I'm going to be very nitpicky in my criticisms, because I don't think there's anything big in these first two episodes in the series that I can really delve into, but there's bits and bobs. But let's go somewhere good. First of all, they fixed the opening titles for a start. Thank God. No more shitty Doctor Who PNG logo flying at us. It's beautiful and lights up lovely, you know. It picks up exactly where we left off in The Church of Ruby Road, which is beautiful. Ruby going into the TARDIS and getting instantly the iconic, played exactly again, Shuti going, "I'm the Doctor." It's like, you are. You so are. And you have these amazing little moments in the TARDIS where, you know, the Doctor is kind of... and yeah, here's a nitpick. It's kind of an exposition dumping, isn't it, for that... brand new viewers. I liked how they did it, though. It did just feel that bit sort of like, you know, tick boxy, where it's like, oh, he needs to mention that he's the last of the Time Lords, and he's, you know, there was a
genocide. Oh, it had genocide. To be done.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I love the way they did it, because he's like, you know, where I'm from, everyone's a bit posh. Or the people that took me in, they're a bit posh. You know, they had monikers like the Rani and
yeah, I like that.
As soon as I heard the Rani, I went... This is me, the theatre. I went, oh, for fuck's sake.
Meanwhile,
But then it was made worse because I realised who I was sat next to, that being Kat, and I was like, do you know who's been purposely omitted from this list here? And I was like, oh, God. Oh, she's going to be clowning hard, isn't she? She's going to be clowning so hard now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I do love as well, Shooty's, you know, when Ruby goes to the doctor, she's like, you know, where are your people now? And he's like, gone! Just the bash of it. And he's sort of leaning over on the jukebox. He says it as well. Like, he's just, there was a genocide. It's the way it's really cool to see this stuff, which... was sort of done in the Chibnall era, and I'm not bashing here saying this was done there, but not dealt with. It's good to see it being used as character work here now. It's good to be seeing, okay, that happened, we're acknowledging it. Phil Collinson, actually, at the Q&A, said, we're embracing the Timeless Child, which is massive here. And I think we can see that going through here as well. It's, you know, whether you're thematically linking it by the Doctor and Ruby both being children that have been adopted, or being from, you know, having parentage that they don't know what it is, it's really nice to see that sort of coming through here. And
it's interesting, actually, because I actually brought it up in our very last episode that we did, our little predictions episode, which if you haven't listened to, you can pause this, go back to that, come back, see if you're on point with anything. Exactly. But I mentioned in that, like, as someone who writes and everything, it's so easy for writers to want to brush aside something that isn't as well received as they'd like, where I truly believe you need to actually do the opposite and double down on these things, acknowledge that those things exist. And I think the fact that they did that in this moment where the Doctor is expressing themselves to someone who's new to them and sort of letting them in, I think that's a brilliant thing. You know, it's great for the Chibnall era, and it's great for this like new start to this new series. I think that's important.
Yeah. Do you think that this really is this is a big question now. Maybe I should save it for later, but I'm going to ask it now anyway. Do you think this is a good jumping on point? Because it feels like there's a lot of exposition there, being that it's like, I don't think this is as clean a jumping on point as, say, Rose, personally.
Because
I feel like there's a lot of, you know, already, you know, we're looking ahead at episode 2, but already you're tying back to the 60th specials, which just happened, which was dealing with sort of everything that happened in New Who to that point as well. So it's like, is this really the fresh, like, you know, jump on that Disney are probably looking for? I don't know, but I mean, I'm enjoying it. So,
I'm enjoying it immensely. I mean, I would probably say that Rose is definitely a fantastic jumping on point, because that is truly like, this feels fresh to a point that it could almost be conceived as reboot if it didn't do as well as they wanted to, but you know, it did phenomenally. And it's interesting because the questions that she asks in these first two episodes are a lot of the exact same questions that both Rose and Martha asked back when they were traveling with the Doctor. Because I believe it was Martha who mentioned about, oh, what happens if I step on a butterfly? In I think she mentions that in the Shakespeare code,
yes.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's the exact same thing.
But it's not the exact same thing. I'm sorry. Can I just say,
Yeah.
Doctor Who turns into Family Guy for a second.
Yeah.
I love it a lot. Like, she's like, you know, what if I step on a butterfly? He's like, oh, please. No. And she does. And he turns. Yeah. She's just like weird sort of lizard bug. Weird.
I love it. Thing. I do love it.
She's like, if you've made an incorrect assumption, I will have to kill you. He's like, oh. And this brings it to me into, in my mind, in this episode, there are already three Doctor-defining moments from the 15th Doctor.
Mm.
And that's the first 100%. One. First one, he picks up the butterfly. He blows a bit of energy or regeneration energy or whatever it is into the butterfly and then smiles and lets it go. That smile, when I tell you, it just melted me and I was crying then in that theatre. It was just... Oh, because it's just the... I can't even put it into words, but it's just the Doctor. It is the Doctor. It's so the Doctor to have that moment of, no, like, you know, something's gone wrong here. I'll fix it. I will literally breathe new life into this thing and it will, you know, fix everything. And then obviously runs back in the TARDIS and puts on the butterfly compensator.
It's like, oh, sure, that's a thing now, but you know what? That's okay. You know, I think this start very much establishes a lot of the tone for the episode. And I think that's kind of a good thing. Like, plus, it's fun, you know, like we don't really get to see a lot of dinosaurs in Doctor Who. So it's always good when we can. And it's also just like, oh, we've got the budget now. Let's show off the budget. And it's like,
it is funny as well, because like we literally have in that scene as well the anagram of TARDIS, what it stands for, and we have, you know, later on we have the phone scene happen, which is very, very reminiscent of say something like End of the World, you know. And then we also have the TARDIS key being passed over as well, which is again, it's like, oh, we're hitting all those beats that Russell has established before, which is, and I can't blame him for it, because I feel like if we didn't have a scene where Ruby was getting a TARDIS key, people would be kicking off about it.
Oh, 100%. And sort of to follow on with, if this is a good starting on point, I think while I would always say Rose is a brilliant first start and it sort of is a good sort of slow pace where it doesn't like feel like it has to rush a lot of the exposition, I still think that this is a great jumping on point for those who don't necessarily want to watch like a 10 plus seasons. I know it's more than 10, but like when you're told, oh, this series is great, but it's got this many seasons, that can be daunting for anyone.
Yeah, it's very much like, you know, this past year, I've, like yourself, I've gotten into One Piece. And One Piece is the joke that people make that it's, you know, it's Japanese Doctor Who because there's so much of it. But I think like Doctor Who, when you get into One Piece, when you truly get into it, instead of going, oh my God, there's over 1,000 chapters or 1,000 episodes, you go, oh my God, there's 1,000 chapters, 1,000 episodes. I get to experience all that. And then when you catch up, you go, oh, I wish I had all that back.
I know. Oh, but there are some truly fantastic moments. Like getting that scene with the Doctor blowing life into the butterfly, having it fly away, that's really wonderful. And it's really great to see him not only interacting with Ruby again, who we already know the relationship is great from the last episode, but it's also seeing the type of Doctor he is around other people who are in a dangerous situation, like his interaction with the space babies, even though he gets it wrong sometimes with one of the funniest and most cool jokes in the whole thing.
Well, he's literally scaring these babies. And later on where he's like, you know, the pressure is caused by a massive pile of nanny filter. It's like, oh my God, the Doctor almost went shit. Like, almost went shit. And it's, you know, it's really cool, that stuff. But yeah, he is a much more human Doctor than I think we've had before. And I really think that's really cool because there's a real emotional core in him as well. Like, he really feels. You know, you look at Ruby Road, he cries at different points.
Yeah.
And again, in Devil's Court, which we'll get to later again, is there's similar moments where you can see he's actually crying. You know, he's that, you know, invested in it, which other doctors aren't necessarily like that.
No, and you bring up a brilliant point, because one thing that, because I had a big conversation with my family after watching the episodes to get their notes as well, because it was just fascinating to talk about it with them. And it was really interesting, because my mum was saying that she thought this doctor was almost too emotional, sort of not enough in control of situations like the other doctors were. And I actually thought, actually, no, I think that is a part of the episode of putting them into a situation that they're not in control of, and B, presenting to the audience a character who's not always got the magic trick, isn't always going to be able to, like, just save the day by being super brainy, although it certainly helps. Sometimes you want a character who's got flaws, is a bit more vulnerable, and I think we've really seen that with Shooty's Doctor. Like, absolutely, for David and Christopher, like, it took a good couple of episodes for them to even open up to their companions. Like, they had to wear this outward persona and be this authoritarian sort of stronger figure for these humans that they maybe cuddled too much. But
you look at someone like the 13th Doctor, who never opens up to her companions, really. Like, you know, they literally have to sit her down at the end of Spyfall to be like, right, we've just dealt with this guy, the fucking master. Like, you need to tell us something now. You need to tell us what is going on, you know. And even like in Power of the Doctor, you know, Yaz has that moment where it's the moment she decides to leave the Doctor, and it's mid-episode, which is like, we keep going from place to place. You're not telling me everything. You're not telling me the things I need to know. Like, you know, like Yaz and the other companions all leave the 13th Doctor not knowing about the Timeless Child. The 15th Doctor's fucking told Ruby within the first hour of meeting her. Like, you know?
That is crazy, that is. But it's nice to see these different types of doctors. And I think for these new audiences, as well as just a new take on the character, it is quite refreshing to see a doctor who is a bit more vulnerable. And I think that really reflects also current themes that we're exploring nowadays, with this idea that you don't always have to be strong. It's okay to show your weaknesses. It's okay to show that you're struggling. And I think that's a really important thing.
I think the world at the minute is currently so overwhelming, and so, for a lack of a better term at the minute, the world is so shit at the minute. People want that escapism, which, let's face it, we've all had with Doctor Who. It's the perfect time for Doctor Who to become a massive success again, because it is pure escapism. You know, it is what it is. And I think at its core, to see a Doctor who is wearing their heart on their sleeve this much, who is feeling this much, who is above all else being kind.
Yes.
I think it's amazing to see, and it's needed, you know. I think there's a place for the more alien doctors, or the more sort of ones that seem less caring, you know. Like, you know, I love
definitely,
for example, you know, earlier on where he, you know, is a bit more like no hugging and things like that, whereas, you know, the 15th Doctor is all about those hugs and all about showing the love, and it's good, because it's a time where we need it.
I 100% agree with you. Like, he's great, and Millie again is showing off just how incredible she is, because
the facial expression she pulls, and the little like quirk she does with her voice here and there, she's so funny. She's so good. Honestly,
she's incredibly funny. This episode as well. I'm not sure if this episode would suit any other companion, because for her, especially for Ruby, being brought up as an orphan and being sometimes looking after other children until they got new homes, her being in a situation of all these children without any parents and her having to fit into that role, she's right in her field. Like the moment where she's like, oh, Eric's in danger, we've got to make a ton of noise, and she's immediately grabbing the pipe, action things, and I'm like, fuck yeah, Ruby, do you do that? Like, yeah, she's really taking charge.
She really does, and it's fantastic. You know, you think about it, she's literally a 19, literally just 19. Like, she's still, it's still her birthday. Like, technically, when they...
Oh, my God, it is! Yeah!
It's still her birthday. Like, she's on, you know, well, she's on this space station. You know, this space station, which looks like a bum.
Yeah.
Very, very, you know, obviously designed that. And, yeah, and she instantly is all about looking after these babies and all about, you know, sacrificing herself if need be and, you know, distracting this creature and, you know, helping... and doing everything she can, which is so wonderful to see, you know, so lovely. And so obviously in this, we have the great costume design, which is the Bogeyman, which is, I think, absolutely fantastic. And obviously set design as well, in that they have, you know, they literally had snotologists, is what they gave the term to them on Doctor Unleashed. I met one of them at, I met one of the set designers at, or set workers at the Chapter Art Center, and he was telling me all about they literally made so many different types of snot for this episode.
Oh my god, like,
just crazy. And like, you know, even think about it, and it really was fantastic, you know, hearing that. And it's so interesting there, seeing the contrast of that. And I think the Bogeyman as a monster looks so great as well. The costume is so cool.
The costume is brilliant, and it does look really scary as well. Yeah. Like when it's chasing you down, it's like, it's that really nice combination of the xenomorph from Aliens and the creature from Stranger Things, Demogorgon.
Oh, there the Demogorgon. Yes, yeah. I saw it and instantly went, oh, that's Demogorgon. That is definitely Demogorgon. Yeah. That's great, and there's some great things about that. The space babies. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the
on the mouths?
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I really didn't like it. I really didn't. I'm not gonna lie.
I think whenever you try and do that, it's gonna look weird. You know,
to be
it's
fair, always going to. It could have been so much worse. Like, can you remember CGI baby from the Twilight movies?
Oh, no. I just imagine, like, you know those, you know, was it like an annoying orange where it's just a PNG with just the human lips just speaking on the actual, like, that's, I mean, it could be worse. I think, yeah, that there's always going to be a level of like uncanny valley with this, because it's so unnatural to be seeing babies talking like that. I do think the effect gets better through the episode, and I think they hide it better. But when you first see it, and it's little baby Eric coming out, who's sort of like the main baby, it is very jarring, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, I knew there were going to be babies in it, not just from the title, but also from like some photos that had gone online. And I thought, oh, okay, they're just going to be there, and they're not going to talk. So immediately when they started talking, I was like, okay, like, is this going to be overly cutesy? Is this going to be overly baby? Like, I think they did very good by not going down the route that they could have gone down, which was a lot of pee and poo jokes, which, not going to lie, those are
there was one poo joke.
And yes.
I suppose actually there were a couple of poo jokes, because you had obviously I don't know if it was a joke so much as it was a plot point, but you had the doctor going like, if I was a baby and I was very scared, I think I'd need my nappy changed. And that's how they find Eric, because they could smell that he's pooed his nappy. Yeah. You know, and then obviously you have the very end being a fart joke. It is a fart joke, you know. And then actually, I suppose the real toilet humor is like the snot stuff about, because very, like, you know, you know, I mean, what is the bogeyman? Like, what is it going to be made out of other than
No. And it's just bogeys. That shows our age right there. Fucking hell. Oh god. and that's the thing, like, I'm not gonna lie, all that kind of like toilet humor, snot humor, for me, it's some of my least favorite humor in general in real life. So I tried to not let those things affect my grading of the episode. You know, sure. I think for me, there are sort of moments of this episode where it felt like it was still what I enjoyed, was great. And I think the standout points is the Doctor's and Ruby's relationship. Yes, I think that is... Oh, yeah, you go first, mate.
Well, I was going to say, it brings me to what I think is the second Doctor-defining moment in the entire story, when they're meeting the space babies and they realize, obviously, that they're basically, their brains are developing, their bodies aren't, and it's, you know, the whole thing that the planet below them has gone into recession, and but they can't shut down the baby farm because of this and what have you. And then it's the bit where I think the Doctor says, oh my god, have you never been cuddled? And it's like, oh, and it's just so heartbreaking, like, you know, all that. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, come here, come here. And then it's the moment he has with Poppy, you know, the Captain Poppy, the baby, where he has this really beautiful scene where he's talking about how, when I think it's meant a lot for a lot of people, you know, particularly people which are fans that are disabled, for example, that it's like, you know, nobody grows up wrong.
No. No.
And that whole moment, that whole scene where he's speaking to her and he goes, and look at me, I've got, you know, and I, you know, I, you know, telling her about how I was passing, that I'm lovely. And it's so, you know, he's acting to a baby or to a doll, probably, actually, you know, in the scene, you know, attitude he is. But it's just the way he does it, it's just so, I'd liken it a bit to, and this is a strenuous link, to Tomb of the Cybermen, where the second Doctor is recounting to Victoria, his new companion, about remembering his loved ones. You know, he's like, I close my eyes and I, you know, think of them, and then, you know, the memory is there. And it's so, it's a beautiful little scene. It's very much like that. It's so, again, it's, I can't even do it justice, really. It's just a beautiful scene. And again, it just made me go, yeah, that's the Doctor right there. That's
it. It is a beautiful moment. And it's actually, it's an example of when the Doctor doesn't do a massive speech. It's just one little moment, which just encapsulates what the Doctor means. And I think as well, when I saw that, I thought of you, actually. And I thought, just how important was that, as you being a father, hearing that come from the Doctor, and having that comfort moment for a child when they're at their lowest.
I did feel a lot of this was, I don't know whether it was what Russell intended, but I felt like it's probably him going, kids and teenagers that grew up with my first go of Doctor Who, a lot of them are probably going to have kids now, and going, this is a kind of like a story for you. And it's because I did, you know, and I watched it with my kids, went on the BBC One broadcast, and they absolutely adored it. I sent Robin in, you know, along with our friends in the group, in a group chat, pictures of them both just glued to the screen. And that doesn't really happen with a 4-year-old and 3-year-old that often, but they just adored it. They did. And it was such a fun, they were scared of the bogeyman, but
oh, I think I was going to say, yeah.
But I think there's cause for, I think it's okay to have children be scared and have them realize they can be brave, you know, as well in these situations. And of course, you know, I did the whole thing. I'd be like, it's not real as well. But, you know, it's, if you're scared, don't worry. You know, it's, you know, you can be strong and you are brave and you are all this. And it was, so yeah, they really enjoyed it. And yeah, and
just as long as they don't team up and get a and flamethrower together to face off the next thing they're scared of.
Oh my god, like, please don't. Yeah, please don't. Please
that
don't.
Was unintentionally one of the funniest moments of just thinking, oh boy, how many kids are going to try and copy that now?
But also, it's the look on the little baby playing Poppy's face, and she's like, yeah, like she's so happy. It's like, oh my god, this baby's an arsonist. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I also really like we spoke about it before, where the doctor is scaring the babies as well.
Yes.
So funny. And Ruby's just like, no, it's all right. It's not real. The bogeyman isn't real. It's not showing this bogeyman. And then obviously that then goes on to what later happens with Eric as well. But in this episode, the only other adult, of the cast is Golda Rochelle, who plays Jocelyn, the accountant that's been left behind because she couldn't possibly leave the babies, and she's been helping them from 6 years from just a little like cupboard, basically. Yeah, that's that, hasn't she? And she calls them over, and we have that little scene then where the doctor and Ruby are talking about, you know, it's how it's coincidence and it's babies again, and you know, all this stuff. And then they're talking about, you know, Ruby Road, and the doctor has a flashback then to Church on Ruby Road where he's there, and the memory changes is what he says, that, you know, and Ruby's mother, we assume it's Ruby's mother, whoever's dropping off at that church, turned and points at the doctor, and then they realize that it's actually snowing on this space station here. It's a really eerie scene, that. And I think that's going to be
really awesome.
Definitely looks like it's going to be something which comes back through the series as well, is this idea of, like, you're getting too close to this, you need to back off. It's like a warning to them, which I think is really cool. And it's definitely, it's something to do with Ruby herself and her parentage, which is, you know, it's going to be interesting to explore that as we go further through this story. But
one thing that I really like as well, because, like, we're getting little ideas of where the story could be going and what's going to be the kind of, I like to call it the bad wolf, you know, like the breadcrumbs, the things that connect. But what I really love is the fact that these episodes have been kind of modeled around Ruby and things that she's good at, which is really, really interesting. It's like, you know, we've got this idea of,
You're exactly right. It's music. This is babies and it's music. It's this idea of the coincidence again. It's the idea of maybe somehow this is happening because of Ruby. Yeah, I like that, Robin. That's a fantastic theory, mate.
Yeah. It's great, because it's not only are you writing a series, but to have that kind of, oh, we're going to have this be something that the companion has like real kind of connections with and can really add their forte to. And obviously we've seen companions show off their skills and excel at things in episodes, but actually having episodes that are kind of almost tailored made for the companion, it's very interesting. That it's not really something that we've seen a lot of.
Exactly right, yeah. And it's cool as well, because it leads into then the scene with where we meet Jocelyn, played by Golda Rochelle, like I said, there, who people will know as Queen Charlotte in Bridgerton, you know, which is a show I absolutely adore. I don't think you've seen Bridgerton yourself, have you, Robin? But
I haven't, no.
Queen Charlotte is very much, she is this powerful character, and everyone, you know, caters to her whims, and she's such a strong presence in the show. Jocelyn, by comparison, is very much not that. You know, she's trying to help the babies, but she's not, you know, she's doing the best she can, but she's not exactly savvy with the equipment, and it's all breaking down anyway. Like, you know, it's a bit like the doctor says earlier on to Ruby, like, most of the universe is knackered, babes. Oh, poetry coming out of his mouth, you know. Did you notice though, Robin, this is my question to you now, you know, the scene where they're showing the previous workers that were on the space station, and they're
I know where you're going with this. Yeah,
the very last one we see, it's the actress Susan Twist as one of the One's there. So I think we have right there, we have our bad wolf, Robin.
I was going to say, because did this is my next question. Did the Doctor face the screen when that was on? Because in the very next episode, he has his back turned to the tea lady. And I remember watching that scene being like, this is oddly focused on this character. Like,
yeah, it's really well directed, isn't it? How it's, you know, he's just missed it again there, you know?
I wish I could credit the person who brought it to my attention on Twitter, because they like showed all those pictures from her appearances throughout all of them. And I was like, oh my God, like without looking for those things, I just completely missed them. But I love that I've now got that connection.
Yeah, I really love that. That's really cool. And again, it's really nice to have that connection going through the story now, like the series, as we're going like, oh, where's she going to show up next? And what's going to happen? And what's going to be the twist with her? You know, what is going to be the Susan twist of Susan Twist's character? You know? I also, okay, I'm going to come to it now. Third Doctor defining moment for me. Okay.
Yes.
Obviously, the Doctor's in the Stuffridge, but the Sonic in and Jocelyn can now control things better. And she manages to trap the bogeyman in the airlock. And obviously, we've had amazing stuff there already, in that they realize what the bogeyman's made out of. Poor Ruby has stopped. It's horrible. It's so bad.
It's like gross. She's on a Nickelodeon game show and she just got slimed, you know.
I love Millie's reaction to it as well. She's like, she's holding that hand up. She's just like, oh, it's the worst day ever. And the Doctor's just like laughing his head off about it. Like, it's so good. But yeah, no, that scene where the Doctor's looking through the little glass there at the bogeyman, as Jocelyn's opened up the airlock and it's just hanging on, and like, and he hears the flashback of the different memories and things being said that, and then his theme starts playing. The second that started, I was like, oh my God, because already I think the 15th Doctor's theme is one of the best pieces of music that has ever been in the show, and one of the best things that Murray Gold has ever written personally. But the second that played and he presses the button to open the door, forces his way in there and smacks against the side, or like, you know, the big doors there, and is forcing himself to press, you know, push the button. You know, you know, he says so much in this episode, always push the button, Ruby. And the look he has as he's forcing his arm to go and do it, it's just like, as he's fighting against the pull of, you know, everything being sucked out for the airlock. I was just like, God damn it. That is a hell of a Doctor action scene right there. And it's so simple in what it is, you know, but it's amazing stuff.
It really is. Like, you've got to have a moment which really shows off what makes the Doctor. Like, who is this brand new kind of, like, superhero almost to brand new viewers? Like, does he rip out a laser pistol and just shoot the monster? No, he tries to save it, and that's what makes this sci-fi hero so different to other sci-fi heroes, to ones who are watching this episode for the first time. They don't have to be told what his actions are, they just see what his actions are. Yeah. And I think that is really important.
What I will say is, I don't necessarily understand why the Doctor and the babies suddenly had like a heel turn about saving the bogeyman, and not...
I was gonna leave that to later, but yeah, that was kind of one of my complaints about the episode, because the Doctor has faced numerous monsters and aliens in the past, and a lot of them have been the last of their kind. Yes, he's given them chances, he's given them speeches, but I felt like this was missing an episode. Like, not an episode, sorry. This was missing a scene where they were watching the bogeyman and realizing maybe it had the intelligence of a child. Maybe they caught footage of it playing with some rudimentary toy on its own,
or
realizing that
just,
it was scared and sad.
Or just the fact that it does scare because it's, you know, it's designed to be this scary thing. But as soon as it actually gets to one of the babies, it doesn't hurt them in any way.
Oh, you know? That would have been great as well. Like, I think something like that, or because I thought initially that this creature was like another baby. Like, if you think of it, like maybe there was like a human section on the top floor and on the bottom floor was for alien babies. And I thought, oh, this is one of those babies who's gotten out. They're scared. They're throwing a tantrum. And maybe that's the moment where the doctor's like, no, you don't understand. This isn't a scary monster. This is something that is scared of you. And that's what needs to be saved. That's what I thought they were going to go for. And when they didn't, it felt a bit, it just needed a bit more to justify it. Great scene. Yeah. But it's just like, you know?
Great scene. There were great little, like, there's massive political undertones to this whole thing, you know, about,
massive political undertones in a Russell T. Davis story?
Well, whether you just look at it being, you know, basically it's a massive allegory for basically what happens in the States in terms of, you know, the women's right to choose, basically, you know, and how some states are, you know, and very right-wing people are like, you know, oh, we must, you know, protect the baby at all, you know, at all junctures, must do that. However, when it actually comes to having the child actually being there, they're not providing any support or anything at all at that moment there, you know, which is very evident here. You also have as well the fact that the babies themselves are refugees, and Jocelyn has that great line that, you know, it's the fate of every refugee in the universe. You have to physically turn up on someone's doorstep to get help. And I mean, you just look at what's happened in our country in terms of what's been done with refugees and the sort of disgusting treatment they're being faced with, and in terms of being offered no help whatsoever and just being shipped off to, you know, to dangerous places in the world. It's
crazy.
Yeah. It's very, again, it's Russell doing what he does best, which is giving you your politics, but not doing it in a completely overt way. I mean, it is pretty overt because you know you can be out there, but it's just it's highlighting the social injustices in the world at the minute, you know, which is really great because you can do that for a story about space baby set in, you know, the year whatever, you know, on from us.
I was going to say, because this, to me anyway, this definitely feels like, for the most part, a younger aimed audience for most of the episode, with those things that when they're a bit older they can understand and appreciate the episode even more. For me personally, watching this episode, and I don't know if it was actually the bumper that they teased on Twitter with like the scroll on the wall and something dark and sinister rushing past, I thought, ooh, there's going to be a twist to these babies. I thought the entire time that like the one adult was hiding was because these babies, like gremlin style at midnight, became these monsters. And that's why they'd been abandoned. That's what I thought was going to be the twist. I thought, oh, they're really like playing up them being cute and being babies. And then they're going to do the dark thing of, no, now they've turned into monsters. Now they're going to come after them. And that's what I thought it was going to be. And then when it didn't, and it was like, oh, no, it just feels like a very kind of safe first episode that's more focused on the doctor's relationship with the new companion. I was a bit like, oh, you know, I was waiting for the other foot to fall. Didn't quite happen. And that's where I feel like that's kind of impacted some of my opinion on the episode, which I don't know if it's going to cause me to rate it higher on future watchings based on knowing what it's about and appreciating more from later episodes. It'll be interesting to come back to these for like a series,
Like
retrospective.
What I will say, something which I think is a massive hype about the episode, I think the final scene, where obviously we have earlier on, we have Ruby ringing her mum, which is really cool that you have the Doctor being like, ring your mum. You see he's learning from past mistakes right there, you know, and, you know, particularly in New Who. And then just the scene where they land in, you know, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Land in, and I love the way they're doing the TARDIS materialization this time as well. Rather than necessarily it's just materializing in a space, it's kind of violent this time. The way the places, like, literally cracks like the ceiling in the flat there, you know. And this again, this is after the Doctor's told Ruby that he can't take her back to that church of Ruby Road. But is the question there, is it because he doesn't want her to know that he was there, or is it just causality and time and well of time and all that bullshit? But right, my absolute favorite moment in the episode, and I've said amazing things already, you know already, Carla and Cherry sat there. I was like, what's going on? And then Cherry, what the blinking flip. I love Cherry.
What was
so
the
much.
Audience reaction to that? I have to know, in your first experience.
Just laughing, just uncontrollably. Yeah. Like Cherry already from Ruby Road, I think, is already like a fan favorite character. Like, lots of people stan Cherry, rightly so. She's an absolute queen. Get that queen a fucking cup of tea, guys. Come on. And like, so many times I've used that screen grab now as a reaction to something. Yeah. It's just so funny. It's just so great. And the episode actually ends with the Doctor scanning Ruby in the TARDIS up on the screen there, because he's obviously suspecting that something's wrong there. And as he walks up the TARDIS, what comes Robin in the TARDIS? The snow.
I think that's a beautiful way to end an episode, just this unease. And it's going to be really curious to know if that comes back later, if him doing that without necessarily telling her is really going to sort of like test the relationship, because already they're a wonderful pair, and like, I don't want to see them break up or anything because they're lovely, but it's just like, you know, it takes one moment like that. Quickly going back, I love when the Doctor steps out the TARDIS and it's just like, oh, she better not slap me, and it's just like,
yes,
he knows from experience.
It's so good, isn't it? Because, like, let's say all the mothers slapped him, so it's great to be.
I also
love that he's like, you know, we're going back, and basically, your mum and your gran are going to know everything from the off. We're not fucking.
No.
So that is that. Well, that was Space Babies, Robin, and when it comes to a rating, I'm going to be completely honest. Again, I think I could be biased, but I think. Okay, I think the best opener in all of, like, new Doctor Who, if we're looking at that in that way, best opener is the 11th Hour, without a doubt. It's the best, you know, it's a great jumping on point. It's a fantastic, quick episode, like, quickly paced episode. So brilliant in the action, what it does. I'd rate Space Babies as, like, my second favorite opener to a series of Doctor Who. And it's very interesting, Space Babies. It's technically, like, the episode 2 of... This, because obviously Church of Ruby Road is kind of like, it's like kind of like your rose. This would be like your end of the world, you know. This
let's establish that then.
Yeah, I was saying to people before this. This is kind of like New Earth, like as if you look at it, like the Christmas Invasion being like episode 1 of David Tennant. This is episode 2 of Tudor Gatwa, like New Earth is. So look at that. It's definitely better than New Earth. I think it is a good jumping on point. I think it's such a fun episode. I love it. I'm going to give it like a high 7 or 8 out of 10 personally, because obviously I think it's great, but I'd nitpick little parts of it. You know, I would give it that, but I think that, again, we can expect better things going on. So tempering that, I'm going high 7, 8. You know,
see,
8, 9. I'm going
8, 9. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. It's up. Okay. That's really interesting, because I remember your initial responses being like so enthusiastic, and you like originally being like, oh, like these two episodes, like 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Well, no. I I absolutely adore it, and I think it's such a rewatchable episode. I've seen it 3 times now, and I've never been bored. I literally went to go watch it again today, but just didn't have time to really rewatch it. But I think it's something I really, really love and really enjoying. So, yeah, and it's not that I've lost interest for it. I'd say I've enjoyed it more each time, genuinely. But it's just that with each watch, it's then also me tempering it and going, okay, well, have we got to come? And this is the first episode, and there are these.
This is the thing.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think as well, for those listening in, if we're given The Church of Ruby Rose as the episode one to the series, because let's face it, it is episode one for Shuigatwa. Like, if this is episode two, and we're rating these episodes based on what we know is to come and the like, you know, we will lower down our scores a little bit, because as much as we could absolutely love an episode, you know, scores may change in time. Like, I definitely think my score will probably soften and increase as I give this another watch. I actually gave it a much lower score. I did. I gave it a 6 out of 10, and like I felt it was a very above average episode. I by no means a terrible episode, by no means a bad episode, but this is why I'm a bit like, I want to rewatch this and maybe give a new sort of score, our retrospective, because I've only seen this once, and a lot of my perspective has been like affected by my own like sense of humor, by things that I was like, I was really held on to the relationship aspect, but then a lot of the childlike aspects, I was like, that's not my jam. And, you know, and I think that's just personal opinion. But that's why.
I think as well, I have to also, you know, I have to be fair that probably my experience is compromised in that I had such a great time seeing it for the first time, like, you know, in what I had a special thing. But no, I think that's fair. And I also think as well, it's difficult to rate these episodes when we don't know what's to come.
It really is. But it's also like, I still left the episode enjoying it. Like, I know, for example, my fiance and my father really enjoyed this episode. And then
was your mum upset that Shooty didn't get his kit off again?
No, but my fiance pointed out to me, it's like, oh, Shuigatwa's got quite the ass on him. I was like, what? What? It's like, well, look, it's so defined in every shot. And it's like she pointed out, especially during the Devil's Court, where he's doing the dance, and it's very much feels like I'm wearing nothing at all. Yeah. Nothing at all. And I was just like, honey, you're in the doghouse tonight. You know that now. But I can't blame her.
Hey. He's our collective boyfriend, Robin. We all share him. It's fine.
Oh.
Right?
He is. Oof. I mean, yeah. Wow.
Sorry, interrupting for a bit of the new segment that Jack's asked me to do. A little Stars Corner, where for this whole series, I get to give my own little points of view on each episode as they come out. Weirdly, I've actually recorded these in the opposite order, where I've just recorded Devil's Chord, and now I'm doing Space Babies. It's a timey-wimey thing, isn't it? So, yeah, Space Babies. Admittedly, the title hadn't grabbed me. I wasn't too interested, but watching it, ooh, it was a good one. It was a good one. Is it the best series opener? No, absolutely not. Is it a great episode of Doctor Who? Yes, I think so. It's got the great chemistry between the Doctor and Ruby. The whole premise of it is really interesting. It's kind of simple. It's good to settle new viewers into. The babies Okay, no, I have to be a little critical of the babies. Didn't really like the babies, but that was just because they were giving me a bit of an uncanny valley vibe, because you know the mouths kind of didn't quite match the fact they're babies. It's just kind of odd seeing them to talk, so it's kind of like, yeah, not sure on that. I know it. A lot of people have been saying that it's quite childish. I don't mind that. I think Doctor Who has this wonderful flexibility to be this, like, 1 week childish show. Like, we've had farting aliens, skin, literally just a flat piece of skin that thinks she's fabulous. We've had a variety of weird and odd things, from both childish to just pure immature, but immature only adults would get it. paving stones. So I don't know, I feel Doctor Who, it's good when it can do childish, it's good when it can do serious. It doesn't necessarily need to be one or the other all the time. I like that you can have episodes that are really childish and then you can have episodes that are really serious. I like the experiments with different types of episodes, which is just what I love. Because that is what it's seeming to do, this series. Because this episode is definitely lighter, but as I said, I've seen Devil's Court, and that was kind of more a blend. And then obviously the future ones, there's looking like there'll be quite a few serious ones, so I'm very excited to see the variety of tones. But back to the point, Space Babies was very much more in the childish camp. Camp is, funnily enough, another word for it. Honestly, if I'm going to review it out of 10, I'm gonna give it an 8. It could so easily have been a 9, but the mouths just freak me out a little too much. Though I did love the sudden decision to save the boogeyman. I thought that was very, very good insight, seeing what this doctor is like. You're seeing a little bit through his lens, which we don't often see in Doctor Who, because I always find that in most Doctor Who stuff, they usually try to go through the companion lens, especially in like more modern Who. Classic Who is a bit of a different story, but modern Who, it's definitely, they try to look through a companion lens. And it's nice to have a little glance through the Doctor one. But another thing that kind of does falter it is, I also think Ruby should have been maybe more utilized. I think this should have been a Ruby saves the day episode, because it's the first big trip in the TARDIS. Usually the good companion story, the first one, it starts with them saving the day. And they get their moment in the sun, and that's usually when the Doctor decides to give them the key or something. And Ruby does help save the day, but I feel Ruby could be more central to saving the day, rather than, hey, go stop this person while I do the big action sequence thing. I'm hoping Ruby will eventually get her moment. Very excited for when she does, because I am loving her chemistry with 15, and also I'm just loving Shuti and Millie's chemistry behind the scenes as well. They are a very good mix, and they're gelling very well together, and I have very high hopes for the rest of the series. So yeah, no, 8 out of 10, could have been higher, but happy, I'm not happy. Could have been higher, but Uncanny Valley mouths kind of knock it down a bit. But yeah, no. Space Babies! And, well, now I've got that out of the way, over to listener questions.
So for first-time listeners, the Space Time Telegraph is our section where we get responses from Twitter or from our email about, from listeners, our faithful listeners, about usually their thoughts or feelings about something, sometimes questions. This time we've gone for thoughts and feelings and ratings for Space Babies. First one comes from the nerd Stalgat. Oh my god. The Nerd Stalgic podcast at nerdstalgic_pod. They say my review of episode one, Space Babies, is it was wonderful and a great introduction for new fans. It reminded me a lot of Rose in that respect. The idea concept was interesting, but I would have liked to see the Doctor flourish more. But as a starter, it was a good start. Interesting that. I mean, personally, I've already said that. I think there's like three Doctor defining moments in this episode, but I think it's interesting to hear what, you know, other people think about that, you know?
Oh, definitely, okay. Definitely.
Yeah. Next one comes from the world's biggest Planet of Giants fan at Nate Lou Sama. Says, the best RTD opener ever, I think. Very tight, very funny. Shooty and Gibson are electric together. The gross out stuff doesn't really work for me, and that baby mouse CGI is but otherwise a banger. Not as flash as episode two, but I do think it's stronger.
I agree with those points. I think they're kind of reflecting on the same kind of points that I mentioned, where some of that humor isn't for me, but you can still appreciate the episode with its like strong points. And I think that's really brilliantly said.
Absolutely, yeah. Next one comes from Peter C. Scott at Duffelcoat Doc, my fellow time siren doctor. Actually, what's the word I'm looking for? He follows me after he's the one after me, basically my successor as the Duffelcoat Doctor, my Red Twilight Doctor. Peter says, while it didn't totally click for me, I did think it was a lot of fun, and I really admire how they picked the baby motif and ran with it as far as they could. CGI baby males were a bit uncanny valley though, and I 100% understand why some of my friends were very freaked out. Yeah, let's face it, babies can already be a bit creepy, a bit scary, so I understand that too. Okay, and lastly, we've got a lovely email. If people want to email the podcast or anything at all, just simply send an email to anawfullotofrunningpod@gmail.com. And this one says, is it awful running pod? Oh, God. No, it's anawfullotofrunningpodcast@gmail.com. Star, scrub that. Thomas Beach, who's you know, friend of the show and written in before. Thomas says, hello, Jack and Robin. Thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts on Space Babies. What a title. Firstly, before I discuss the episode, I just have to come out and say it. The titles are gorgeous. I let out a proper football fan cheer when the updated visual and extended theme played. I'd always felt there was something missing from the 60th special titles, and my goodness, they were great. However, I still think the logo needs a little more tweaking. I don't know. It's kind of clunky and unrelated. They're still trying to keep it 3D and bless them, but after weeks of the stencil logo renders, I feel that's just much better, much nicer. I see they've incorporated the reveal regeneration with the glow to show off the logo, but the CGI, it looks like a clunky smooth diamond. It just looks like a clunky smooth diamond, which throws off the rest of the lovely visuals. I don't know, maybe they'll grow on me as time goes by. Now for the episode itself. My experience seeing Space Babies is very much tied to how I was at the time. I just finished a grueling night shift, and coming home to what was basically such a warm hug of an episode was so needed. The themes of the episode resonated so hard, I was almost in tears. Having struggled with my mental health and even physical health, hearing the Doctor, my hero, telling me, no one is born wrong, broke me down in a good way. I need to let out my built up emotions from the night shift and the past couple weeks. Can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Space Babies has become an instant comfort episode for me. Moving on, Shooty and Millie were bloody amazing. Their energy was incredible. Every scene just lived and breathed through those two. I found myself howling with laughter at Shooty's bogeyman, all of his goofy expressions. I'm just dying to see uncut versions of these episodes. I also really appreciated how Shooty and Millie navigated and really played out the set and space. what I mean is in several wandering the corridor scenes, you can see Shooty interacting with the walls, wafting his hands through mist and smoke, sliding past sparks. It was really effective at making each of the at making even the simplest of scenes cool to watch. Of course, I can't avoid them any longer. The babies. Sorry, space babies. Honestly, I don't mind them. I thought they were cute. I love the remote control prams and strollers. However, the uncanny CGI mouths were so freaky it brought me right back to some awful childhood films like Son of the Mask or Baby Geniuses. That's the one. That's the one.
Oh, that is
Baby Geniuses. Oh my God. God damn it. Yeah. Well, we've come a long way from CGI technology. Just no. No.
No.
Like their space babies, while they get their human toddlers and baby bodies, I feel like the concept of grown babies with advanced tech could have been explored more creatively. We could have had telepathic dialogue or perhaps matching the toys and the Tinker toy sticks and hands. Imagine if space baby dialogue was interpreted with like a speak and spell. I think that's one of my few gripes of the episode. The Bogeyman creature looked awesome, but through so much camera trickery, it felt like we hardly got a chance to experience the creature. It's why I'm really thankful for the Doctor Who Unleashed episode, as they really give a great look at the effort into those creatures' effects. Finally, because I'm probably filled so much time already, I'm so sorry. Don't be sorry. This is wonderful.
No,
this is
a wonderful
email. Yeah, gosh. I really enjoyed this episode. I know it won't be everyone's cup of tea, but this was such a lovely, warm hug of an episode. It was personal. It was personally what I needed, and I think it's an effective pilot advert for what the show can be to a new audience. Look at these two mad bastards running around in time and space. I'm not sure if we're doing ratings. We have, you know, if we are, he says, I think I'd give this a solid 6.5, maybe even a 7 out of 10. It's not perfect by all means, but to me, this was a perfect above average episode, you know? Massive thanks to both for this opportunity to chat. Can't wait to discuss the rest of the series. And that's from Thomas at TPD Beach. So thank you so much for that, Thomas.
Wonderful. That was a beautiful one. I mean, don't get me wrong, everyone has given phenomenal responses, and to hear all of those and how everyone's interpreted the episode differently and how it's meant to different people, like, that's great. Like, to be in this new era of Doctor Who and for each episode to be different for everyone, it's beautiful. It makes me even more excited for what's to come.
Yeah. Well, that was the very last listener response, Robin, so that means I'm going to take you over for your dinner now. You can have your tasty morsel. It's time for a Cannon Buster.
Yes!
So tonight's Cannon Buster actually comes courtesy of someone we spoke about already on this podcast. Peter C. Scott, my Dapplecoat brother, the another Time Siren Doctor, actually suggested this one to me, Robin. So are you ready for this? Okay.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Can you think of an episode in series one of New Who which features a baby in it?
Oh,
the answer is Father's Day. Father's Day is the episode.
Yeah, okay.
There's Baby Rose in that episode. Baby Rose, we see, you know, we Baby Rose. Yeah, but, in that episode, we also see a young Mickey Smith, don't we?
Yes.
Well, you know, because, you know, Mickey being a little bit older, we see young Mickey Smith. In that episode, we see one of the Reapers, which is the creatures which has come to sort out this sort of time paradox, actually devour and kill Mickey's mother.
That's right.
Yeah. And although for the episode, when we see the Reapers, you know, devour characters, they come back. In series two of New Who, it's actually revealed that Mickey's parents, you know, despite the fact he was talking about them before, it's that he was orphaned at a young age, so it's like the timeline changed.
What?
So
wait, no,
if you think about it, because of that episode, it's all set up by Rose changing time. Basically, the reason Mickey is an orphan could be headcanon.
Oh my God.
It's because of Rose.
Okay, because Oh my God, yeah, because on a rewatch, like I recognize like young Mickey and everything, and I knew that the mother got like killed, but I never picked that up in season two though. Like, that is a juicy morsel. That is that. Ooh, that's
There's
gonna
the
go down well for my dinner.
there's some canon teeth you right there. Yeah, absolutely. But Robin, that does bring us to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for being here to talk about Space Babies. It's so great to be talking about new Doctor Who. And guess what, people? As soon as we finish this podcast, we're recording the next one. So join us next time where we're going to be talking about episode two of season one of Doctor Who, The Devil's Cord.
Was cool.
Yeah, well, I have been Jack.
I have been Robin.
We've been an awful lot of running. Keep
Keep
running.
running.
We might have got that. I don't know. We might have. It's fine.
Nah,
Anyway,
it
see you
will
next
get
time,
there.
everyone.
Bye.
Ta-ra.
Thank you for listening to An Author's Running, a Doctor Who podcast. This episode was edited by Star herself, our editor-in-chief, as you will. The theme was provided by Hudson Media. Please go and check them out on YouTube and Twitter. And if you want to support the show, please consider donating to our Ko-fi. There is absolutely zero obligation, but it does help keep the lights on. Thank you so much. If you want to follow myself, Jack, Robin, or even Star over on Twitter, please go ahead and do so. We're very easy to find. Thanks very much. Ta-ra for now. Keep running.